From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Every other year, the Gateways Music Festival, which celebrates classical musicians of African descent, comes to Rochester in August. This is a festival year, and members of the orchestra are in town early for a special performance. The Gateways Brass Collective joins us today to discuss their unique paths to classical music and, of course, play some, too. We're getting down to brass tacks next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and the Gateways Brass Collective joins us today for an hour of talk and really good music. I'd like to introduce you to the band. Let's start with trumpeter Courtney Jones. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Nice to have you here. Also joining us, Amanda Collins. She plays the horn.
Good morning.
The big guy with the big instrument, Richard White, is our tubist.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning to you, and hello to our trombonist, Isria Butler.
Good morning.
And last but not least, a voice that a lot of folks are used to in Rochester, Herb Smith, is the second trumpeter, the other trumpeter. Hi, Herb.
How you doing, Julia?
It's so nice to have you here today. You are part of the Gateways Music Festival. Israel, why is the festival important?
This festival is important because it brings together musicians from all over the country and even internationally of African descent. And we play classical music, and it's the first time people are seeing musicians of African descent performing classical music. And for us, it's a time that we actually get to not be the only person in an orchestra that's playing that looks like us.
Let me ask you about your path to the trombone and to the world of classical music. How did that start, Israel?
Started in middle school. I was in choir, and I didn't want to be. I went to the band director after a couple of weeks and said, I think there was a mistake on my schedule. I'm in choir, but I wanted to be in band. And he said, okay, well, you look like a low brass player. So he gave me a baritone and sent me home. It was hard to carry, so I eventually switched to trombone in middle school. And I was, kind of struggling for a while. I was really second to last chair in the whole band. And a middle school English substitute teacher would see me walking back and forth to school with my horn, and he gave me a mixtape of big band music. It had Cab Calloway, Count Basie, Artie Shaw, Duke Ellington, and Glenn Miller on those tapes. And I would play along with that, and started getting serious and taking lessons in high school. Went to the Marine Corps and played in on the West Coast. And started to studied with George Roberts, the father of commercial bass trombone. And he was instrumental in getting me to Eastman because he knew Dr. John Marcellus and put a call in and ended up at Eastman. But after Eastman, I ended up playing with all the bands on that mixtape.
Did you really?
I did.
What was that like?
It was, life-changing experience. And one of the first bands that I got to play with was actually with Herb here in Rochester, the Cab Calloway Orchestra.
It must be, well, you have students, and your students have gone on to perform and to teach as well. What is that passing of the torch like for you?
Well, it's like being a proud father. You find that little spark in the student and help cultivate that and send them out into the world.
It's sometimes, it feels to me like sometimes all it takes is that one teacher, just that one person to change a life.
That's absolutely correct.
All right, so let's listen to some of this life-changing music. And we begin our show today with the Gateways Brass Collective, with a bit of Bach. This is the Contrapuntus number 9 from Art of the Fugue. You're listening to Backstage Pass. Contrapuntus number 9 by Bach on Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and that was the Gateways Brass Collective, and they join us today. I'd like to talk to and introduce you to Courtney Jones, trumpeter. And Courtney, Bach sounds so great as brass pieces. What is it about Bach that makes that work so well?
Well, you got to look at it, you know, a couple of ways. You have many people that do something very well. And for me, Bach was the godfather, is the godfather of fugue. And so he presents music and different ideas and conceptual ideologies through melody, which is then permutated through stretto and episodes. And the beautiful thing about Bach is just that, is that he allows the melody to be performed and passed throughout the ensemble, where it has to act as a fixed wheel, if you will, so that once that motor starts, it doesn't stop until we get to the station, you know?
It's a fantastic piece. Now, I just learned something today that I didn't know, which is that you actually initially grew up right here in Rochester.
Yes, I did. I was born and raised here in Rochester, New York. My mom worked for Kodak, and my dad worked for the Xerox company.
And then you moved to Georgia?
Out of all places, yes.
Well, that must have been a culture shock.
Huge.
What was it like being a northern kid in a southern place?
Well, it was interesting. You know, when we moved down to Georgia, you know, we were the ones with the funny accent. And we were surrounded by a lot of people who also had funny accents, you know. And it took us a minute, well, me, a minute to get acclimated to, one, the weather. You know, there was no snow. And it was interesting when people said, wow, you have snow up there? And it's like, yes, it's snow. It happens every winter. And it was weird because during the Christmas season, this is what we were looking forward to. And I almost didn't believe that Santa Claus would come because there was no snow and we didn't have a chimney or a fireplace.
Right.
And so, but after a while, I appreciated the fact that there was no snow because you get used to, you know, you do get used to the seasons, but it's a different type of culture that I began to appreciate and love.
Where did you start your life with the trumpet, here in Rochester or in Georgia?
It actually started in Georgia. I wanted to be a violin player. And we were getting ready to walk into the music store, and opening the door, there was this trumpet. And it was sunny and bright that day, and it just hit me in the face as soon as you walk in because of reflection. And I told my mom, I was like, that's what I wanted to play. And the guy was like, well, you know, well, we already have this for him. You know, this is the instrument we already have. My mom's like, well, this is what he wants to play. This is what he's going to play. Yes, ma'am. So I ended up playing that instrument in sixth grade, but then I switched to trombone a year later. Then I switched back to trumpet a year after that.
Once a trumpeter, always a trumpeter.
True.
Yeah, I know. You guys are the troublemakers all the time. You do a lot of jazz, too.
I do a mixture of things. Yes.
Is there a significant difference for you in your brain between playing Bach and playing Brubeck?
No. And for me, it boils down from macro to micro. It's where do you feel the beat? You either feel it on 1 and 3 or 2 and 4. It doesn't matter what it is. And that's always been my philosophy, you know? And because you have classical and you have jazz, but if you misplace the beat, it's the same thing, you know? For example, if I may.
Sure.
Bum, bee, bee, ba, ba, bee, dee, dee, doo, dee, 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 do, 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 dee, dee, da, do, dee, dee, dee. So for me, if you just displace the beat, you can play whatever style you want. It's about groove for me. So that's how I'm able to go back and forth between two styles of music.
You do a lot of work of outreach with City Kids.
I do.
So where do you identify the City Kids that you're going to work with?
So I started this, I was very fortunate to be a part of the Gluck Outreach Program at UCLA, where I finished my doctorate. And, you know, we were fortunate to go into cities where, in certain areas in schools, where the students didn't necessarily have the supplemental support to have lessons or to come to concerts. And throughout that, I became more involved through LA and then through other organizations, Trumpets for Kids in Dallas, Texas, and starting something, Propel Project in Boca Raton, Florida, where I am right now.
We are, I know outreach is a very big part of the Gateways Brass Collective, and we'll actually be talking to Amanda, the horn player, about it in just a little bit after we listen to some more music with the Gateways Brass Collective. Here they are, play Michael Kamen's Quintet on Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
Michael Kamen's Quintet. This is Backstage Pass. That was the Gateway's Brass Collective. And we're listening and chatting with them, including our horn player, Amanda Collins. Amanda played that instrument. People don't just pick the horn. Did you just pick the horn?
No, I did not. Absolutely not.
And yet here you are.
Here I am.
You just can't let it go once you start.
Nope.
You work a lot, Amanda. You are also somebody who works with outreach and diversity and inclusiveness. And I want to ask you how you identify the people to talk to and the and sort of the people you need to make this case to?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. I think first and foremost, I start with young people. I start with my students. I teach at Duke Ellington School of the Arts down in Washington, D.C., and all of my students are musicians of color. And I feel that it's important for them, first and foremost, to know that even though the numbers are small when you go to concerts and see stages, like I think it's something like 4% of orchestras in the United States currently are of people of color, which is really low compared to a school that's all, you know, students of color. I think it's very important to communicate with them that we're rising in numbers. There are some of us out here. This is what it looks like. This is how it's represented. So,
how did you get to the horn?
Well, funny story. My dad was a high school band director for 40 years in a neighboring county where I grew up, and when fourth grade band tryouts rolled around, I had been playing piano for a while, and I decided I wanted to play in the band because, you know, playing piano by yourself is kind of lonely, and I'm a very social person. So my dad was friends with the band director. And my very first, we got to, it was a petting zoo. So you got to try all the different instruments. And I tried flute, and I was like, wow, flute's pretty cool. And of course, all the other little girls were playing flute. And I was like, well, I want to be cool like all the other little girls. Let me pick this flute up. And the band director's like, oh, I'm so sorry. We ran out of flutes. And I was like, but I feel like there's a stack of flutes right over there. Oh, no, those are spoken for. No, you can't have that. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was really disappointed because I thought, hey, this will fit in my backpack. And this would be really convenient for riding the bus. So I didn't want to have to carry something big. So my next pick was clarinet because, again, a lot of the other little girls are playing clarinet. And weirdly enough, they were out of clarinets that day, too.
That was a bad day for you.
It was a bad day for me. So the band director looks at me and I look really, you know, depressed and sad. And she's like, well, how about the French horn? I said, the French what? And she pulled out this case, this big, weird shape thing, and opened up the case and put the mouthpiece in. She says, you buzz into it like this. Can you make an M with your mouth? And I did. And then she said, can you do this? And I did. And next thing you know, I was, you know, playing the instrument. So, but come to find out, like 10 years later, my dad had arranged like that whole thing. So,
your dad had arranged for you to play. This was an arranged marriage.
Yeah, so to speak. Yes, it was that or the oboe. So, I'm really glad that I ended up with a horn.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I see. Now, I wanted to play the oboe, and they were out of oboes, and they gave me a trumpet.
Oddly enough, right?
And, which then turned into a French horn, and which then turned into me never playing music again.
So. Well, there you go.
When you talk to your kids and you tell them, you know, this is how it looks, this is how you can move on, do you get pushback? Do your kids tell you ever they don't see a point?
Sometimes, but not maybe for the reason you might be thinking. A lot of times it's cultural. So I teach in an inner city school. And these kids are not raised, not all of them, some of them are, but the majority of them are not raised going to concerts and hearing like what we're doing today or seeing, you know, symphonies or musicals or solo performances or anything like that. They, especially with social media and everything nowadays, I mean, the kids, they all have phones. They're looking at Instagram, they're looking at Facebook and Snapchat and all of that stuff, and they're being fed a certain type of music, and that's pop music. I have no problems with pop music. I love pop music, but there's more to us than hip hop and R&B and things like that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different colors out there. So,
okay, it seems to me though that this is also part of the parents. How do you make the case to the parents? Look, get them to this concert. Get them to a musical.
Well, I personally reach out to my parents on a regular basis, make that connection right off the bat. So it's really easy for me to to get them to concerts, especially when I'm saying, hey, we're going to be here and playing this. You might find this interesting. Trying to find a common ground to relate to them. I think that's the way to do it. So,
this is a Backstage Pass. We are talking to and hearing, listening to the Gateways Brass Collective. And our next two pieces, actually, back to back, we begin with Jaime Texedor Dalmau's Amparita Roca on Backstage Pass. Thank you. Sidney Jackson Weiss wrote that, and before that, Jaime Texidor Dalmau's Amparita Roca with the Gateways Brass Collective. This is Backstage Pass, and Herb Smith, well, he's Herb Smith. Herb Smith is the only trumpeter I've ever seen perform playing his trumpet while sitting in the lowest position. That's a new one for me, Herb.
Okay.
I wanted to actually start off by congratulating you. You just made your debut as a conductor of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a real honor to conduct such a great orchestra, my own orchestra. It was just out of this world, a dream come true.
So where did you grow up?
Cincinnati, Ohio, from where I'm from originally. And I left there to come to Rochester to go to Eastman and never left.
Cincinnati, Ohio has a great music school and a really good orchestra as well. Were you aware of any of that as you were growing up in Cincinnati?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I was in the Cincinnati Youth Symphony Orchestra. I went to the school for performing arts, kind of like a SOTA here in Rochester. And was in connection with the members of that orchestra, took lessons from Marie Speziali, who was the second trumpet in Cincinnati Symphony. It was great. Yeah, so I knew all that thing and basically was like wanted to be a classical musician.
I hear a lot of stories like Courtney's, actually, of I saw it, it was shiny, I had to play it. Is that how you chose the trumpet too?
Exactly. Exactly the same. The band director played all of the instruments, and we had to kind of figure out which one you wanted to play. And I remember kind of, you know, you're a fourth grader making decisions. So I'm thinking, well, look at that one. It's shiny. It's not as big as a tuba, you know, or a trombone. Flute is too small. You know, like I'm kind of making those kind of choices. Let's try trumpet, you know, and it stuck.
It seems to have worked for you.
It has. It has. I'm very thankful for trumpet.
The Eastman School of Music really changed your life in many ways. You're very clear on that. You came here and you became you. What was it about the Eastman School of Music that let that happen?
At the time, Eastman School of Music did not have an undergraduate degree for jazz. So all of the musicians that came to Eastman were classical majors. And so that basically, in order to be in jazz, you had to do both. You were a classical and in jazz. And that dichotomy of doing both really helps you. It really makes you a better musician. And that's, I was always in the jazz bands. I was taking jazz improv classes. But I was always in the orchestra. I was in wind ensemble with, you know, Don Hunsberger, you know. And so that really allowed me to develop on both sides of the spectrum. And I think that's the thing about Eastman that I really enjoyed. Eastman's a little bit of a different thing now because they do have an undergraduate jazz major, which some of the classical players don't get a chance to play jazz the way we did. And if you think about the history of Eastman, all of the jazz musicians that came out of Eastman, most of those musicians were classical majors, like Byron Stripling, like Alan Vizzuti, like all these guys, Ron Carter. These were all people that were classical majors, but came out of Eastman as jazz giants. It's an amazing thing.
You were also in a school that was, especially when you got there, predominantly white. And Cincinnati is a well-integrated city. This seems to me that it might have been a bit of a culture shock for you.
It was a culture shock, but in the classical world, it's like that everywhere, as far as there being little to no African-American musicians. So in Cincinnati, still, you know, I remember Norman Johns was the only African-American cellist in, the only African-American musician in the Cincinnati Symphony. I remember that, you know, and he's now retired. But yeah, just wherever you go, it's just, that's just the way it is. You know, Amanda said 4%, you know, African-American or people of color in classical musicians and in orchestras. That's just the way it is everywhere. So coming here, I was ready for that. You know, I was a little ready for that.
You've been doing Gateways for a long time.
Yes, I have.
How many years?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know. I knew you were going to ask that question. I have no idea. But, I mean, it goes back to Armenta, back to the days when we would all wear African garb for the concerts. And she would bring in all these dashikis and these long gowns for women and the head wraps. She brought all that stuff in, and everyone would wear that for the concerts. So it was, I mean, it goes back pretty far.
You must be thrilled that the Gateways and Israel as well, you must be thrilled as Eastman alums that the Gateways has now made its home there.
It is amazing to see the growth of this program, because it was one person doing everything. Like, Armenta was running around giving checks, and it was just very unorganized, not because of anything other than just this was her baby. And she was just, she wanted to make sure it was right. She was doing everything. Now to see that there's staff and that there's other administrators involved, it is amazing to see how it has grown.
That was Herb Smith, a trumpeter with the Gateways Brass Collective, and we'll get back to music now with one of the great African-American composers in America, just so key to our lives, and that's, of course, Duke Ellington. So here on Backstage Pass, we listen to the Gateways Brass Collective play a Duke Ellington suite. Thank you. Duke Ellington Suite played by the Gateways Brass Collective on Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and we have been hearing tales of youth orchestras and band leaders' support of home lives. But Richard White, our tubist, that was not you at all. You came to this with a slightly rockier path than everybody else in this room.
That is correct.
Tell us about it.
I grew up homeless on the streets of Baltimore. I had dreams of being a football player. I broke my hip, and I went to Baltimore School for the Arts on a Saturday. Auditions were over. School was closed. The director just happened to be there, and I was with a sousaphone on my back and crutches because I had just broke my hip, and I said, I come to audition for the School for the Arts. He said, oh, really? Auditions were yesterday. And I said, so I'm here today. I went upstairs, had an audition. He put some music in front of me and said, can you read this? I was like, yeah, that's this. And I put down second valve. He's like, do you know what note that is? It's this. And I pushed down the second valve again. He said, you can't read music. Because when I started to read music, it was a Howlin' It tape. It said, this is B flat. Play B flat. When you have mastered B flat, move to C. That's how I learned to play tuba.
Note by note.
Yes.
What in your brain made the connection between not playing football anymore, so I guess it's going to be tuba? That seems a leap.
I didn't have a choice. I looked at what my skill sets was after I broke my hip and said, I guess it's going to be the sousaphone. And I went to School for the Arts. It was a rocky start. I was what you call a yo-boy. I wore sweatpants, Adidas, like Run DMC was hot then. This was in the 80s. And the school quickly showed me that the adults would run the school, not the students. They asked me to speak on a TV show. And I said, speak? They're like, yeah, there's, you know, they'll come talk to you. You can get scholarship. And I said, time out. I can make money playing tuba. And then from that day forth, I got up at 6 o'clock. I was at school practicing at 7 o'clock. And my whole goal was, I'm finna make money with this thing.
Have you yet?
I mean, I'm still learning the fingerings. I mean, I live a humble life. I believe in giving back. Me and two other friends started a scholarship at Indiana University. It's kind of weird because I'm still paying Sallie Mae back for this, all the schooling I have, but I believe I should give this scholarship.
You are somebody, as we hear your story, distinctly, it was that teacher, it was that mentor, and you've had a string of people who have held you up along the line.
Yes, I believe in persevering. I think the only thing that's going to stop me from being successful is death. I've had mentors that when I failed, they simply said, do it again, you can do it. I was very blessed to have that. I don't know why people don't give up on me, but as a result, I was able to overcome some serious obstacles and achieve. You know, and that's what I love about Gateways. We come together regardless of our backgrounds, and we can achieve great things in a universal language, which is music.
What kind of students do you have?
Oh, A to Z. I teach in New Mexico at the University of New Mexico, and we have students that are farmers. We have students first generation. I believe the message is the same. The secret to success is work hard, work harder, work as hard as you can. It's really that simple.
You have this great quote. You can have good days or bad days, but what you can say at the end of it is, you're not done yet.
Oh, wow. You just made me smile. I love that. That's how I feel. Whether I have a good day, bad day, whether I advance at an audition and win, the best part about my life is that I'm not done yet. I get to get up tomorrow and do it again.
And you have a film being made about you.
Yes, the film is Raw. My name is Richard Antoine White. My alter ego online is Raw Tuba. The film is just simply about my life and about me being the first African-American to get a DM in music, doctorate of music, from Indiana University.
In the film, they take you back to Baltimore to see where you grew up. What was your visceral feeling when you went back to that place where you began as a homeless street kid?
I just got emotional now reflecting back on it. It's pretty intense. I left that life. I had the tuba, and going back there, it makes me realize how blessed I am. I'm very lucky that people didn't give up on me. I think there are hundreds of me in Baltimore and in Eastman and Rochester. They just need a chance. I think the message to the world is be kind and help others. If we lend a helping hand to others, I think America can even be greater than it is right now.
Thank you for sharing that story. This is Backstage Pass, and we are listening to the Gateways Brass Collective. And we have just two more pieces of music to hear from them. We will begin south of the border with Astor Piazzolla and the Tango Appassionato on Backstage Pass. Thank you. Spain by Chick Corea. That was the Gateway's Brass Collective, a little percussion with Herb Smith, flugelhorn and hand claps with Courtney Jones on Backstage Pass. And before that, it was the Tango Appassionato by Astor Piazzolla. I'm Julia Figueres, and Lee Kuntz, who is the president and artistic director of the Gateway's Festival, said people of African descent have been involved in this classical music since there was a classical music. Isria, at what point did we, where or how did we as a society drop that ball? We talk about the 4%. We're not getting classical music into societies, into our society of class of African-American citizens.
Well, it started with Jim Crow, because in New Orleans, there were all black orchestras. There were also, Creole and mulatto musicians that had orchestras. So right about Jim Crow, when we had all the segregation began, that's when we started to lose that aspect. And it's only been, recently, brought back.
How do we fix that?
We need more education, more exposure, more access. And that's kind of what our mission is.
Herb.
There are many organizations also that are starting to do this, like The Color of Music, like Amani Wins. Like, there's different organizations that are promoting African-American classical musicians and trying to get that word out to people that this exists. And also, what you got to look at is you have to look at the education. Okay, so like, if there's in inner city schools, if they're cutting music programs, then that's how you're missing this whole subset of people that aren't getting musical training.
Yes.
I also think that it's programming from our orchestras. So one of the things that I wanted to mention in the beginning of the program when Israel was addressing how the Gateways Festival operates, one of the things we do is we incorporate music, original works by African-American composers, and works that are not often programmed or played. And I think that it is crucial for orchestras to program such works and feature such musicians on their regular concert series.
Richard?
I agree with everything that was said. Also, there's the Sphinx organization, which is all African-American and Latin. I think the issue lies with resources. I think we have to give inner-city kids the opportunity to take private lessons. I mean, that's the last thing in their budget. They're trying to eat every day. And I think that's the difference between the really affluent population and the not affluent population is education and making the resources available.
But having said that, how do you make the case, Courtney, to somebody who says, we can't afford lessons? Music is peripheral. It's not necessary. What's necessary is food, and we don't have that.
I look at it like this. If a university or a school can find a budget for a sports team, they can find a budget for creative arts. Because these students, most people can't fathom what these students may or may not go through. And if they don't have a creative outlet to express their feelings, then they will find another way to do so. And that's not necessarily in a good light. And because of making the case for the reasoning and understanding and then finding the resources to support situations or festivals like this, or to bring in some type of creative environment so that these kids who may be coming from these situations, they can come in and say, hey, you know what? I may be going to this, but at least when I go to band, I can play my trumpet for Mr. Smith, or I can play my trumpet for, Mr. Butler or Miss Collins, or Mr. White, and they have that. So we just have to find it. I mean, you either do it or you don't.
But we keep looking, Herb, at things like STEM, which does not include the arts. It feels to me like we are increasingly taking the arts out of the picture. How do we make that case to the powers that be that they must stay?
There are so many different studies that show how the arts affect the brain, and how there are even situations where, like, lawyers have music degrees before they go into law school. There are so many different proof of things where the music is so important in our just day-to-day living and for the brain to develop. So we have to get this out to people. They have to learn that and figure that out.
I want to thank you all very much for coming into this room and sharing your music and your words with us on Backstage Pass. Our executive director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Brayton. With thanks again to the Gateways Brass Collective, Israel Butler, Amanda Collins, Courtney Jones, Herb Smith, and Richard White. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.